Thanks, Ruth. We join in prayer. May the words of my lips and the meditations of all our hearts be acceptable in your sight, O Lord, our rock and our redeemer. Amen. Somebody said to me this week that they're glad they're not having to preach at Victoria Methodist Church this morning. A few days after the tragic death of that church's minister. Last Sunday, Mike Etheridge led Victoria Methodist into a new commitment. After an uncertain time, it looked as if things were beginning to happen. Goes without saying that our hearts go out to Helen, Michael's family, his wife Helen, and their four young children. We'll pray for them in a few minutes and for the church. Methodist ministers come and go more often than Baptist ministers usually, but not like this. And it really puts faith and language about God to the test, doesn't it? A few days ago, all the talk was about God's leading, God's purpose, God's guidance. Now, they wouldn't be human if they weren't questioning today what that means, when it seems to have been undermined so easily, so completely, so soon after being uttered. Behind the pain and the tragedy of loss, I spent a little time with some folk from Victoria on Wednesday, and it's clear that they are hurting very badly indeed. Behind that are the nagging questions: where is God in all this? What's it all mean? What now? Not questions, you may say, particularly for us, though they are not far away at any time. On this occasion, the suffering has come quite close, but even if physically it's farther away in Syria or in the Aegean Sea or somewhere, actually it's never that far away. The challenge of faith is still to be able to speak language about God, about God's purposes, at the same time as there is a world in which random and apparently meaningless suffering happens. All of which bears on our reflections during Lent on the faces of Jesus. This week, the very human story from the childhood of Jesus, which is the only story that we have in the New Testament. Jesus was, it seems, about 30 when he began his ministry. Of his life before then, between his birth and the outset of his ministry, we know little. Just this story in the Gospels. Oh, there are lots of other tales, most of them very fabulous and quite mythological, and they were deemed not to be true to the spirit of Jesus, and they were not included by those who put the New Testament together. Or to put it another way, this one story was included because it seems to be true to the spirit of Jesus. It contains, you might say, a little bit of Jesus' DNA. It contains the essentials about Jesus that we see later on in his ministry and his journey to the cross. But it is, as I say, first of all, a very human story. At the heart is the anguish of a parent at losing a child. We know about this. Can't be a parent anywhere that hasn't wondered or worried about what they would do if they were to lose a child. You've probably heard moms and dads in a supermarket or a shopping centre crying with relief and anger mixed when a lost child is found. You've perhaps heard the sound over a tannoy. Will the parents of Abigail or Jolyon or Jordan or Jade or somebody Smith please come to the information booth and collect their child? You've got your own memories, perhaps, of wandering off out of your parents' sight. It happened to me, apparently, in a branch of Woolworths way back. You remember those stores? In the days when I had something of a penchant, it seems, for pushing the price tags all the way along the row to to the end. The shelf stackers had very carefully lined them up under the products, and my joy was to push them all the way to the end. On this one occasion, it seems, while my mother's back was turned, I enjoyed doing it very much down the one side and then went round the corner and pushed them all the way along the next aisle and the next one as well, by which time I was thoroughly lost. There were no CCTV cameras at the time, of course, but ultimately, as I presume, things ended happily. But then back then in those halcyon days, we used to play out every day in the summer without anyone worrying about very much about where we were, as long as we came home in time for tea. Freedom on the one hand, protection on the other. Parental worries on the one hand, children's love of adventure on the other. Somewhere between these extremes lies this very universal human story. It hails from, I suppose you would say, a different world to ours, in which groups travelled together, everyone mixed, everyone looked out for everybody else, supposedly. A world of pilgrimage and festivals, a world in which a 12-year-old Jesus would already have been considered a grown-up, able indeed to get married. Still, large groups of immigrants making their way through Europe, family groups travelling together, thousands of unaccompanied, lost or orphaned children fetching up at various transit camps, stories from India of children being separated from their parents in the press of crowds in giant railway stations and never being reunited with them again. Not so very different from our world to theirs, to the time of Jesus, is it? Seems we keep discovering this. After 3 days, they found him. After 3 days. Imagine the comments from the folk they asked around Jerusalem. Shouldn't be allowed to have kids, that kind of person, if they're not prepared to look after them. Should have kept a closer eye on the lad. You travelled how far before you noticed he was missing? Can't you just imagine what people were thinking? Imagine the headlines. Parents find 12-year-old after 3 days. Nothing much has changed, has it? The rumours, the gossip, the anguish, the guilt, the if-onlys. Ask the McCanns. Ask 100 other parents whose plight has not attracted as much press attention. Ask the orphans on the streets of Berlin or Bristol or Boulogne or Birmingham. After 3 days, they found him in the temple, among the teachers, among those crusty old men of Israel who spent their days poring over the law books, making judgments, interpretations, prophecies, selling them for a shekel. Or perhaps waiting, like Simeon, for the consolation of Israel. Jesus was found sitting among the teachers. Wouldn't be allowed today, would it? Someone would have called it in. There's a young lad over there with all those men. Child protection. Safe to grow. The story tells us all we need to know about Jesus and our world. Anxious, over busy, easily distracted, swarming with rumour, danger, misunderstanding, mixed motives, regrets, worry. A world of worried parents, of unnoticing strangers, of preoccupied officials, of Jobsworths. A world of traumatized children and broken families and ruined homes. A world rushing to hell on a hand cart. And in the midst, a still center, Jesus, the man-child, full of understanding, clear about his purpose, not presuming too much, holding the attention of the worldly wise of the age. And we, like every week in the storytelling, are asked to place something alongside the face of Jesus. Something representing our worries, perhaps, or our guilt, or our questions, or our experience of suffering, or loss, or confusion. But here's a question for us this morning. Who in this story is lost? And who is found?